The Behind the Bets podcast with Doug Kazarian is presented by DraftKings. Download the app for free today.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you. This is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to another Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. It is our final one of the month of May. This month has really flown by. We've had some sporting events picking up. UFC, we're going to get into the next UFC card this Saturday. My next guest, we're going to break down a few of his favorite plays, talk about some round betting, talk about correlated parlays that some of you may be able to do maybe, and also some analysis without the crowd and how that can help you live wagering. So we have a conversation with Matt Buholt coming up momentarily. But last week we had Michael Collins, ESPN caddy, on the podcast. Very insightful, very fun as well, like he usually is. And the match too lived up to it. I thought it was great theater, fun betting action, and also a great watch. Christine, were you able to watch the match part two?
I was. My dad and my grandfather are huge golf fans, so it was great to sit down and actually have some sort of sports back on my TV.
You know, yeah, and it evolved, right? So we, versus last year and this year, obviously having the quarterback flavor, Brady was getting ridiculed on Twitter, rightfully so, but then he dunks in that eagle from the fairway. Fantastic job. And it was just exciting. I found it riveting when Mickelson, I think it was on three, explained his thought process on the chip. Whether going into the grass and like the color of the grass and how it skids in the rain. It was so next level, and it was just an AP course and then some. Brady was even like, what the hell, man? That stuff's so elaborate. And he was explaining to Brady, he's like, that's like you throwing a screen pass. This is like my wheelhouse. Cause that's for all pro golfers. It is Justin Thomas there was kind of understanding everything he was saying, but then obviously Mickelson being such a short game guru, he was really the professor on that. So I thought it was all just awesome. The live betting, it got up huge. And it was like almost like minus 3,300 when they, Tiger was up three. I think they were up three and Brady was blowing up. So, certainly a lot of excitement with the live betting as well. But I want to get you a little, explain who we have coming up next. Matthew Buholt, who's I've known for a long time, been in the business. He's a UFC guru, so we're going to break down the UFC card coming up this weekend, UFC Fight Night in Las Vegas. But a little background of Matt, what he does as well in terms of integrity and sort of make sure that everything's being on the up and up and how he helps professional leagues. But we're getting there, Christina. We're getting closer to sports, 2 weeks away from regular PGA Tour events, NASCAR back in full. We have some discussions going on right now with the NBA and Major League Baseball, so hopefully sports is returning soon.
Hopefully.
So a lot of central figures behind the scenes are working hard to get that done. So hopefully things start to progress along those lines. Before we get to Matt, I want to tell you about DraftKings, which is giving new users a free shot at over $100,000. Download the DraftKings app and enter code Doug at signup. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Stop. Hammer time.
Time now to bring in the first-time guest here on the podcast, Matt Buholt, who is the CEO of U.S. Integrity. Matt, I know you and I have almost participated in the same panels at some of these sports betting conferences, but good to finally connect here on the Behind the Bets podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, Doug. Thanks for having me this morning.
All right, so before we break down the UFC card, because that's really what we want to roll up our sleeves and get into, because UFC's been had a lot of buzz during this pandemic, just given that it was ahead of things a couple weeks ago. But just a little background to our audience. Obviously, we're 2 years into the PASPA, and just kind of like what you do with like how much your kind of workload has increased given with your relationships with the professional sports leagues.
Sure. So, my background started, I spent a decade almost at Cantor Gaming, and way back when I started at Cantor, they were the first company to launch a regulated mobile sports betting app. At one point, I think about 2012, we did $1.2 billion worth of handle in the state of Nevada at a time when the state was only $2.6 billion a handle. So they were really indicative of what was happening in the regulated sports betting marketplace at the time. April 2018, I launched a company on my own called U.S. Integrity. And we work with the Pac-12, the Big 12, the SEC, the NBA, WCC, Big West, just a wide, you know, University of Pittsburgh, Penn State, a wide variety of universities and professional and collegiate leagues and teams and conferences, as well as big operators like William Hill, Betfred, you know, U.S. Bookmaking, the Superbook, and regulators across the country in states that have regulated sports betting. And essentially what we do is game integrity, fraud prevention, compliance-related services. And, you know, that starts with the, you know, the kind of the main topics people always think about, like match fixing, point shaving, game manipulation. We do the most robust officiating tracking that there is, including tracking officials' career behavioral patterns so we can identify what's really abnormal for each official. We do play insider information, which is a major issue right now. It has HIPAA ramifications as well as gambling ramifications and different laws and policies in each state, jurisdiction, and league. Player and referee safety. It's a wide array of compliance-related services around sports betting, and essentially we build customizable dashboards where we look for abnormalities within the wagering markets correlated with abnormalities within the events themselves, and then investigate to make sure nothing nefarious is happening.
Wow, that's quite the background. And obviously, you know, we think of like Tim Donaghy, like you said, the first thing is match fixing and things along those lines, because that's the biggest fear of a lot of these companies. It's new territory. There was a stigma about betting all these years. We're not where the European sort of community is with betting. There's that stigma. It's starting to erode, obviously, in the last 2 years. Leagues are on board. There's definitely partnerships, as you very well know, with advertising and these leagues. But, you know, all it takes is one scandal, right? Like if Donaghy happened now, I'm not sure what would happen to PASPA and everything along those lines.
Absolutely. And think back all the major scandals we've had in the last 20 years, you know, Northwestern, Toledo, Hawaii, UTEP. You know, most recently, Brandon Johnson at San Diego, as far as ones that got prosecuted. And Brandon Johnson was the, you know, that was 2014. It wasn't 20 years ago. And he was the all-time leading scorer and assist man at the University of San Diego. And the one thing that all those instances have in common is, in each case, the perpetrator was making a few thousand dollars or less per game. This isn't multi-million dollar scams. More often than not, it's a collegiate player who got himself in a tough spot and needs to make a few grand to get out of it, or a professional athlete or official who's been extorted into doing it, not even paid, but mostly extorted. And, you know, history tells us that most of these scandals aren't big multi-million dollar schemes that are planned out, but rather people trying to take advantage of people who put themselves in a situation.
Yeah, and they're usually a couple knuckleheads, right? Like in terms of trying to orchestrate, like the quote unquote masterminds.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, that's good stuff. And obviously, I imagine business has been pretty busy since the Supreme Court ruling. And you know, you have to just continue to educate, I would imagine, and parameters in place to track all this.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually just partnered with Ohio University to launch a sports gambling education curriculum online, go at your own pace, where you receive a certificate from the University of Ohio. So education's really at the forefront of a lot of things that we do.
Wow. Well, hopefully everybody's going to continue to get on board. And once the pandemic ends, I know I've said this on the podcast that I think local municipalities are going to need revenue even more. So some of the ones that were kind of hemming and hawing and playing the long game might have to be a little bit more aggressive and kind of change and tweak their appetite towards it, because it's a revenue source that they can't really afford to ignore.
Yeah, and I think not only are we going to see more and more states continue to get on board with regulated sports betting, I think we're going to see some regulation changes even in the states that have already launched. You know, some of those early adopters like New Jersey and Pennsylvania, you know, the whole goal was to get out and get running. But now I think there's some opportunities for them to even refine their regulations and even find extra sources of revenue from the sports betting, regulated sports betting, and what it can generate in terms of engagement and licenses.
Yeah, and there's always room for improvement on anything. So I think people who resist, even if, like you said, New Jersey is at the forefront, so to speak, of outside of Nevada, You can always kind of enhance in your protocol and get stuff moving in that way. Question for you as we get ready. How's the handle with the operators you've talked to? How's the handle of this UFC been during the pandemic as I shift gears here?
It's been great. I mean, they compared the handle on the UFC 249 pay-per-view. So we look at the last three events they did. It did more money than an average Monday night football game would do, which is really big money. You know, they did over 700,000 buys without one of the big mega stars on there. You know, no Khabib, no Conor, no John Jones, no Daniel Cormier. Yet the card still did over 700,000 pay-per-view buys. The Saturday card that we just had, the last UFC card headlined by, Alistair Overeem and Walt Harris. Again, not huge mega stars at the top of that card. The undercard wasn't exactly littered with stars. And that was the second highest rated card on ESPN, since that deal started on ESPN Plus with UFC. So, I mean, big numbers, and the handle was about 3x normal UFC, and they compared that to more like a Sunday night NFL game. So the handle has been amazing through the pandemic, and it just shows you the appetite. I mean, you think about Korean baseball, table tennis, golf, the handle that the match did on Sunday. Even NASCAR is seeing increased handle, and historically that's a fan base that doesn't bet. So the appetite to wager on live sports certainly hasn't waned at all.
Okay, let's get into the card for this weekend's UFC Fight Night, and definitely a twist, almost like the old reality show days. It's going to be held at a UFC complex, given that there's no fans needed. You don't have to do it in an arena. So we are going to have a card this Saturday night at the UFC compound, so to speak. Does that affect your handicapping at all, Matt?
Not really. The one thing that I noticed in the three cards this past week is that fighters that tend to throw whipping shots, like big power hooks and whipping punches and kicks, which sound really echoey and loud in the big arena, they all won. I mean, think of all the contentious fights in the last card, Marlon Vera and Song. That fight could have gone either way, but Song was landing the louder shots. Even in the Edson Barboza fight, and I think most people agree watching on TV at least, that Edson Barboza won that fight. He hurt him badly in the first round, hurt him badly again the end of the second round with that body kick and then ground and pound. But at the end of the day, it was actually Dan Ige who was landing the louder shots. Claudia Gadelha, same thing in her contentious split decision. She was the one landing the louder shots, even if they were hitting gloves. But those big whipping hooks and whipping kicks, they sound loud in a big empty arena. Here, we're not in a big empty arena this week. I wonder if that won't be as much of the case.
That's a great point, because I know there's been some buzz, myself included, in terms of the fighters hearing their coaches more easily, and then also really the former fighters who are on the broadcast team. And some fighters have conceded that helped them, and they sort of were – just tweaked their sort of game plan in the middle of the fight because they overheard one of the guys on the broadcast kind of, you know, commentating, and it helped them. It was almost like coaching inadvertently. But that's interesting because the judging has come under fire a little bit. You mentioned the Barboza fight. I got hurt on that one. I had Barboza. So you think it is swaying the judges more of those coin flip rounds?
I absolutely do. And I think the audio that you hear from those shots, even when they're just hitting glove, is so loud. And I just went back and I watched all three cards because there were a lot of contentious decisions. To your point, I also had Barboza, and I wanted to make sure I just wasn't biased in some of those fights. And I went back and looked, and it seemed like in every case, the fighter that was landing the louder shots, which is guys that tend to throw power shots, whipping hooks, they won almost every single decision, contentious or not. And I thought, I wonder if the audio of those shots sounding so loud is having an impact on the judges there in those empty arenas.
Fascinating. Fascinating stuff. Okay, so that's a good little handicapping while we await crowds, which I would imagine is going to be the case for a while. So what do you think that kind of acoustics will be in this smaller venue then? Probably louder.
They could be louder. You're right. So I certainly am taking that into account this week. And it's helped me land on a couple of underdogs this week that maybe otherwise I might have passed on. But now I'm thinking maybe worth the value, because I think that they're going to fall into that same category And if it goes to the judges' scorecards, we'll see if it continues to sway them.
Well, that kind of brings up the scorecard component for live wagering. Is sometimes, I mean, look, there's no, you know, it's not like basketball and football where you actually have points on the scoreboard. You know the situation after each period. You just kind of have, you think, you know, in the live wagering, there's been some huge dogs that have won, huge dogs from the live wagering, because these, it could be the slightest of margin of victory for one fighter in a round. And so basically just kind of a discrepancy between the judges and what the public and slash the odds makers think.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, to your point, look, I had Marlon Vera, and I one of the contentious ones, but I actually thought Song, by the narrowest of margins, won round two, which was the swing round. Song obviously wins round one. Vera obviously wins round three. But you're right. You don't have to win the round by a lot. And at the end, what really can sway people sometimes is that fighter coming on where, you know, if you drop the first two rounds, it doesn't matter if you win the third round convincingly and you're the fighter coming on. If you lost the first two rounds, you lose 2-1.
Yeah, that's, it's just remarkable. Okay, so let's break down the main event with Tyron Woodley here, favored almost 2-1 against Gilbert Burns. And then obviously over-unders are always a part of this as well. 4.5 is the one I'm seeing. So it's expected to not go the distance in the main event. How would you see this fight going down?
Any way that you're going to handicap this fight, the handicap has to start with what do you believe Tyron Woodley has left in the tank? This is a guy who doesn't have a ton of fights. At 38 years old, he only has 23 professional fights, so he doesn't, and he hasn't been in a bunch of wars, so I don't think he's ring-worn, but he's had a lot of injuries, shoulder surgeries, knee surgeries. This is a guy who's dealt with a lot of injuries and is coming off a fight, albeit against a beast in Kamaru Usman, where he didn't look like he really had anything left in the tank. And at 38 years old, it's hard to gauge. And the heavier weights, I mean, look at, we saw Andre Arlovsky 40-plus win a fight. Alistair Overeem, 40-plus win a fight, you know, this month. Glover Teixeira, 40-plus win a fight. So age is just a number. But the one thing all those guys had going for them is that they were heavyweights or light heavyweights, where you can tend to carry the power better and the pace is a little bit slower. At welterweight, this is a pretty hectic pace. And at the end of the day, I don't know that Tyron Woodley can keep up anymore in these hectic paces. I thought he lost both fights to Stephen Thompson. You know, the Damian Maia fight is what it is. But at 38 and coming off injuries, I don't know if he has the sting in the right hand that he used to have. And it's probably going to be difficult to out-grapple a guy like Gilbert Burns. So for me, I think this is a razor close fight. Woodley's certainly going to be the bigger guy. He used to fight at middleweight, you know, against the guy he fought most of his career at welterweight, I mean, at lightweight, and Gilbert Burns coming up. So there's no doubt that Tyron Woodley's going to be the bigger guy. And Gilbert Burns also has a history of fading. He has a history of gassing out in 3-round fights. How is he going to do now in a 5-round fight? Is he going to be able to go the distance? But you look at the run he's on with a dominating knockout in the first round over Damian Maia. He handled Gunnar Nelson, Mike Davis, who's an excellent striker, Olivier Aubin-Mercier. I mean, he's won 7 of his last 8 fights, with the only loss coming against a really good Dan Hooker. Gilbert Burns is on a roll. I actually think that even though Gilbert Burns is known for his Brazilian jiu-jitsu, he's going to have a hand speed advantage here. He's going to be the faster guy. He's going to move better. We know Tyron Woodley tends to be a little stiff and plodding. I actually think you have two grapplers here, one of who is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu ace. The other is more of a wrestler. If this fight stays on its feet, which tends to be the case sometimes when you get two grapplers who both have good takedown defense, I think Gilbert Burns is going to be the faster guy. What I worry about with Gilbert Burns here is if he tries to go for takedowns against the bigger guy in Tyron Woodley, then he's probably going to gas himself out trying to get those takedowns against the significantly bigger fighter, and that's where I think he could run into fatigue issues and end up losing the late rounds and drop a decision or potentially even get choked out. But again, if it's a razor-close fight and you're getting 1.5-1, I think it's underdog or pass here with Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, I was going to say laying 2-1 of that kind of situation that you laid out, not too enticing. So a play on the total at all, 4.5, unders minus $1.90?
You know, the problem with it that makes me nervous here is that neither one of them is a great finisher on the feet. I don't think Tyron Woodley has the power in that right hand he used to. While Gilbert Burns' striking has got a lot better, and he did get a knockout over Damian Maia in his last fight, Damian Maia doesn't really have any striking defense and is 40-plus years old. I don't know that these two could finish each other. I'm more nervous that this fight ends up resembling the Stephen Wonderboy Thompson fights a lot more, where their pace is slower, where they're both trying to land one strike at a time. And thus, if I was going to bet the total, I think I would go over the 4.5 rounds.
Just for plus money. Okay, so Burns, you see value. It's a bummer because Woodley's a friend of Daily Wager. We've had him on a few times. He's just a dynamic personality and jokes about bringing in the bacon, the cheddar, and then throw. You know, he loved the talk of firing on fight. So it's a lot of fun there. So we're rooting for him, but obviously you wouldn't lay the $2. Any fights that do stick out besides the main event that we just discussed?
Sure. So I like the co-main event. I like Blagoy Ivanov in this fight. Augusto Saki is 14-1-1. He's undefeated in the UFC. He does have some wins over Chase Sherman and Andre Arlovsky, but he's also a guy that lost to Chet Congo in Bellator. Blagoy Ivanov is a guy who went undefeated in the PFL, 5-0. That's how he got his road to the UFC. This is a really tough guy. All four of his fights in the UFC have gone the distance. He has a, you know, we saw against Derek Lewis, who's a huge puncher, that Ivanov has a great chin, and he's going to be in this thing till the end. And at the end of the day, he has the faster hands. He's the better grappler. A lot of people just assume that Augusto Saki would be a great grappler because he's from Brazil, but he has zero submissions and he's really a heavy-handed puncher. But he is also a plodding heavyweight. He doesn't exactly have the most ripped body. I think Ivanov's going to be the faster guy. I think he's going to throw more volume. I think if it goes to the ground, he has advantages. It's basically a pick'em, or if you shop around a bit, you could probably get Ivanov around even or -105. I'm going to go with Blagoy Ivanov in the co-main event to get it done against Augusto Saki.
Any opinion on the total? It's 2.5, overs -190-ish.
I think the fight is going to go the distance. I just think that Ivanov has such a good chin, but he doesn't necessarily have that one-shot knockout power that we see in a lot of the bigger heavyweights. I think if it goes to the ground, he has an opportunity to submit Saki. But if I think if it stays standing, it probably goes to a decision where he wins the decision. So, I mean, I do think it goes the distance. I just don't want to lay -180 for it to go over.
Right. I made a joke on Twitter recently that betting in over in the UFC is kind of like betting an under in soccer. It's just like so stressful. And one punch can just ruin you. So betting that kind of on a total is just excruciating.
Especially in heavyweights.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good point. Okay. So you like his chin there. You like his fast hands. What else?
I took Caitlin Chakagian against Antonia Shevchenko. I thought this was a reverse favorite here. Look, at the end of the day, Caitlin Chakagian just fought for the flyweight title against Antonia Shevchenko's sister, Valentina Shevchenko, who's one of the more dominant champions in all of UFC, the UFC women's flyweight champion. But Chukagian's a former bantamweight who fought and beat Alexis Davis, who fought Ronda Rousey for the title. And since she dropped down to 125, she is a big flyweight with very technical striking. She has some impressive wins lately. She's beat Irene Aldana. On the other side of it, I feel like Antonia Shevchenko is kind of using her sister's name for a UFC career. She is 8-1, but she only has 9 professional fights. She's already 35 years old. You know, the younger sister is really the one who's the MMA ace here, but I feel like the Shevchenko name is earning way too much respect. Antonia Shevchenko lost to Roxanne Modafari. She's been handled very carefully in her career in terms of matchmaking. This is a big opportunity for Chukagian, who just lost the title shot to her sister, to get some revenge. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen it in combat sports before, where you lose a title shot to one person, and then your very next fight, you get to face that person's sibling in a revenge spot in a situation where you're the more experienced fighter, you're the bigger fighter, you're going to have some size advantages. So at the end of the day, I think Caitlin Shukagian is very live, will be extremely motivated to get revenge on the Shevchenko family here. And I think the wrong fighter's favorite, and I took plus 130 in this fight.
All right, well, I can always get behind an Armenian descent fighter, so that's right up my alley. But when you say, and I've said this before, sometimes I feel like it's the kiss of death, say the wrong team's favored. Do you have any superstitions along those lines?
No, I say that for this reason. So when the cards are announced, I try to make numbers in my head, like anyone does for any sport. And in my head, I thought Caitlin Shukagian was going to be around minus 135. And when it came out the other way, I thought, wow, that's really interesting. And I wonder how much of an effect the Shevchenko name had on this line. Everyone.
Absolutely. Oh, it always does.
Yes. So I just thought the wrong fighter was favored. Antonia is not Valentina. They are light years apart in terms of ability, talent, where they're at in their careers. And I just thought Shukagian probably has a lot of advantages here, dropping down from 135 to 125, where she's going to be a big, strong. She's going to be a problem, I think, for Antonia.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I've tracked some of the Shevchenkos, and I definitely agree with you on that front and the brand name, so to speak, because it just is what it is, especially, you know, in a division, in a class that's not super, super popular at the betting window. You had one other fight that definitely you wanted to get to and that you have circled.
Yeah, I have two others that I've been looking at. Number one, Mike, the Alpha Ginger Carlisle, taking on Billy Quant, Quarantillo here. And Quarantillo is a guy who failed miserably, really, in 2015 when he was on the Ultimate Fighter show, rallied back on the regional scene, got a shot on Dana White Contender Series, and this is the ultimate grappler versus striker matchup. Spike Carlisle is ripped. He looks huge. He has that prototypical bodybuilder, power puncher body, comes into this one with three straight first-round knockouts, which for this weight class is really impressive. Billy Quarantillo coming off the, kind of grind out win. He's a total grappler in every sense of the word. What I think is going to happen here, again, and we've talked about it, is two things. Number one, Spike Carlisle, the Alpha Ginger, is going to be the guy landing those loud shots. So in the arena, if this thing goes the distance, assuming that he doesn't constantly get taken down here in this fight and that they spend some significant time on the feet, he's going to be the one throwing the power shots. They're going to seem loud even if they don't land clean. And at the end of the day, if he can keep this fight standing, I think he has a good chance of finishing anyway because the advantage on the feet is going to be so significant. So if you think Quarantillo is going to be able to get it to the ground, where then it's probably his fight. If you think Spike Carlisle can keep it standing, he's probably going to win and could win by knockout. So I also think you could do a correlated parlay here. If you like Spike Carlisle, you could take him at plus 125 to win the fight, plus 130 to win the fight, and then also parlay it with the under because he has a good chance of winning early by knockout, where if you're going to lay the minus 150 with, Quarantino, also favor the over because I don't know that he's likely to get a submission. I feel like he's more likely to just grapple and ground and pound and grind out a decision win. So I think this one's a little bit correlated too. And then the last fight I like is Jamahal Hill minus 125 against Kidson Abreu. This line opened minus 175, minus 180 in favor of Hill, and it's dropped all the way down to minus 125. Is there's this speculation out there that Kidson Abreu is going to be able to take this fight to the ground at will against Jamahal Hill, who is a dynamic striker. But when I look through Kitson Abreu's career, he's a guy who, while he's an amazing grappler and submission artist on the ground, he's not a great wrestler. So he doesn't get a lot of his own takedowns very easily. He doesn't shoot for the double leg or grab that single leg. A lot of times he gets takedowns and scrambles or gets taken down himself and is just an amazing submission jiu-jitsu practitioner off his back. Jamahal Hill is not going to attempt any takedowns. He's going to try to disengage anytime they get in the clinch. And his striking is unbelievable. Power, size, speed, athleticism. I don't know that Kidson Abreu makes it out of the first round to get him to the ground. I actually think the value's on Jamahal Hill. The UFC wants to push Jamahal Hill as a prospect here. He's that guy that kind of reminds you of a you know, Adesanya with the way that, or Anderson Silva in his prime with the way he moves, the way he strikes, the power, the accuracy. They want to put him in favorable matchups right now to highlight how impressive and exciting he could be. And I just think people are overestimating the Kitson Abreu ground game a little bit. And I think he gets knocked out by Jamahal Hill early in this one.
Wow, nice. Okay, so you brought up a couple things. First, you mentioned a correlated parlay. How many places allow that? Because I know most do not.
It depends how much you're betting, too. So if you walk in and you're just a recreational person, you want to watch the fights this weekend, have a little fun, throw $100 on a parlay with, you know, $50 or $100 on Spike Carlisle and the under. Most places are probably going to take it, but when you start getting into $500 or $1,000 or more parlays at correlated levels, especially if you're flagged for a sharp player, then that's where you could run into difficulty. So certainly you may have to shop around, and some places may not allow it. But I think a lot of it depends on how much you're trying to do it for.
Because, you know, you hear about it a lot with correlated parlays, like the Warriors and over, but then their defense is really good, or the Rockets and over is probably a better example. But like, there's so many more variables with those kinds of sports. Back in the day, I know there were some first half correlated parlays I used to be able to do, like when Oklahoma had Sam Bradford. So like side and over Oregon, especially in the Chip Kelly days, those were allowed for a little bit. And I think UFC, there's definitely, like, styles make fights, as we know. So if a guy is going to win, he's going to win under, you know, there's definitely, like, value there with the correlated parlays. Hence, I have been difficult finding some places that allow it.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that a lot of places won't allow it. And look, a lot of places won't let you parlay UFC, period. But if you have the opportunity and you're playing at a recreational level, there certainly is some value to do it.
Okay. And the other thing you brought up was the line movement. So you mentioned significant line movement with, the Hill fight versus Abreu. Any other, lines that you notice have moved a lot?
No, I think that was the big mover. The biggest one that I saw. I haven't really seen a ton of line movement. We've seen this Roosevelt Roberts, you know, kind of be all over the place. He's a pretty significant favorite, and I think I saw it as low as 240, as high as 330. So there's been some volatility there. And the other one with some pretty, you know, Woodley, if you looked at, like, you know, Superbook here, they opened at minus 115 on Woodley, and it's all the way up to minus 185 now.
Wow.
But a lot of respect for Tyron Woodley here, and the fact that he's going to be a much significantly bigger fighter in this fight. I just wonder what he has left in the gas tank at 38, coming off a really dismal performance and several injuries that have made him very inactive over the last few years. And then the Augusto Saki, Blagoy Ivanov co-main event fight, we've seen that thing flip favorites several times. I saw Ivanov get as high as minus 135. I saw Saki get as high as minus 125. So probably if you shop around, you can get at least even money on either fighter there if you're really shopping around, because it seems like different books have a different fighter favorite in there. But that's pretty much the main line movement, you know, big swingers this week.
And there's ways to jump in live. Like, you know, obviously Matt had some great insight throughout this conversation, and there's just ways to sort of, you know, you talked about, hey, if he's able to do this, or if so-and-so is able to do that, you can kind of look for that round one, maybe get involved in the next few rounds, especially if it's a champ or main event fight and you get five rounds. So that's something to keep in mind. Any final thoughts here for this card?
No, you know, look, kudos to the UFC. We're so happy to have fights back here in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, this week. And the fights in Florida were exciting, but this is where, you know, the fights really, this is the fight capital of the world. So we're excited to have live sports back here. Not the best card in terms of names, but this is a really important fight. Look, Tyron Woodley gets a win here. It's very possible, because of his name value, that a title shot could be next for him. So, well, even though it may not seem like the biggest fight, a lot on the line in the main event Saturday night.
Gotcha. All right, my man. Great stuff. Always good to connect. I know we communicate a lot, not on the podcast, but good to get you here on the podcast. I know our listeners are really appreciative as well.
Appreciate it, Doug. Anytime, my friend. Good luck. Take care.
All right. And hopefully we'll connect soon on a panel or in person in Vegas or something along those lines.
Yeah, sounds good. Anytime you're here, let me know. I buy a beer.
Okay. Be well.
All right. Take care, Doug.
Kicking is for losers.
Okay, that's going to do it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Want to thank everyone for taking time. I know they're, I know things are slower in terms of the work front for most of you, but busy at home, especially with homeschooling. So taking the time to download the podcast and listen, I really do appreciate it. Got a lot of feedback from some of you out there on Twitter regarding the handicapping of the ping pong action out there in Moscow. Of course, there are other leagues, but we only broke down the Russian Pro League. And hey, we're still having fun with this. Still exciting. We'll see what happens with the betting handle of that as other sports returns. But thanks to Matt Holt. Very good insight. I encourage all you guys to kind of track him down on Twitter as well. He's got great UFC breakdown. Hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. And sports schedule starting to return. So we're getting there, folks. We're getting there slowly but surely. Christina, any final thoughts here before we send our listeners off into the long weekend?
I would just say to, you know, enjoy the fact that sports are slowly starting to come back and we're returning to somewhat of sports betting normalcy.
Yeah, I know. I know we've had some, as Matt touched on, some unique handles, whether it be NASCAR, even the golf event. You know, it's not exactly Super Bowl handle, but still we're getting some football handles. But we'll get there eventually. So thanks to everyone again, and we'll see you back here next week.